Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Game Store Profits, episode 128. This is the podcast where a handful of guys get together to talk about games and about God and about how much we love both of these and how well they come together. My name is Mike Perna. I am here with my co-host, Jeff Romo.
Yellow.
And Daniel Fisher.
Yes, that is my name.
You had to roll high enough for that to be. Haven't you ever learned that you don't put something that you need to have happen on a die roll?
You know, I roll so well. It's always a good thing for me to just roll just because.
There you go.
To my keen ears, I think I heard you roll with advantage. Is that true?
No, I just straight up got a 17 on that one.
Nice.
Well, guys, it is good to be back. I was very thankful that you guys were able to kind of audible as I had to deal with some family health issues kind of very last minute. So thank you guys for handling that. But now I am back.
And in charge.
We'll call it that, sure.
Yeah. All responsibility for the following words fall on Mike Perna's shoulders.
Oh, that's terrifying. There's enough of this ministry that falls on my shoulders. Thank you very much. I do not need what we say on this lovely little podcast that we have going on here.
That's right. Okay.
Well, at least the parts that aren't already mine. I can claim responsibility for any of the idiocy that comes out of my mouth.
Oh, so no indemnification for me.
Yeah, no. I will not claim the things that come out of your mouth. Enough problems have fallen upon me because of that already.
Whatever could you mean? Never mind. Let's continue.
Well, I've got plenty of stories of stuff that I've been playing because I've had a longer time than usual to gather stories about what I've been playing. So how about you guys? What have you guys been up to since the last podcast?
I'll tip it to Daniel.
Well, let's see here. Absolutely nothing. No, I've had a busy period. The kids are home for summer break and trying to keep them entertained while I'm working and things like that. I haven't really got to play anything, but I've started to add games to the list of stuff I need to get played this summer and the things I'm going to teach my kids how to play this summer. So,
because you've taken the summer off from your regular group, right?
Yeah. So like I'm trying to get, some more churches involved during the summer. So we can, you know, just get more people interacting with each other. And I'm talking to more pastors and, you know, a few of them are like, yeah, I kind of like that idea, but we don't have the time for it. I'm like, but you got the time for a pancake breakfast, huh? So things like that, and I didn't mean to step on any toes there, guys. Because you know pancakes are really
good. Be careful, man, because I love pancakes.
Oh, I love pancakes. You got to realize no. I had the perfect pancake recipe, and we could talk about that, too.
I can't say anything either, because it was recently that I got up on my Facebook and said, man, I wish I could get more people to play longer games, because you know, the same people who tell me, oh, a two-hour game, that's really long, and I don't think I'd ever want to play something like that, and then proceed to play 2 hours of Munchkin.
Right. And so, like, I'm the same way. I mean, I love a game that I have to have. It's kind of like, okay, I'm going to get biblical on you guys. So,
what?
Young Christians, we give them milk. And as you get older, you go to the vegetables, and then finally you get to the meat, right? My game's going to have a little meat to it. There's only so much milk I can drink before I just get tired of it. And and one of the things that's going to help out is my daughter, as I've mentioned before, I'm getting ready to start her RPG sessions with her friends.
Nice.
So that's going to help out, you know, with my craving for a longer game. But I want to get into some of my longer board games. I want to finally get around to playing Mice and Mystics and, and break into the some of my D&D board games as well with the kids, because I think that's easy enough for my six-year-old son to understand.
Now, I'm going to have to ask, I mean, with little ones involved, are you going to be able to convince them either to play Goblins or Halflings?
Well, the first thing when my daughter, she's playing an elf wizard. That's going to be her first character. One of her friends was over, and I was like, well, Jada, what character do you want to play? She goes, is there a character that I can use a hammer with? I said, yes, you can be a dwarf. She's like, all right, can I be a female dwarf? I'm like, you're going to look just like the male dwarf, okay? And she's like, that's fine, as long as I get to smash things with my hammer. I'm like, that's good. Do you like money? She's like, yeah, I love money. Okay, we're good. So,
do you like money and facial hair? Both of these will be important to you.
Yeah. So she was happy with that. And I'm just going to talk to the next one to see what character I need to build for her. And hopefully she leans more towards a fighter. So, and I may just throw an NPC that's a rogue in there because we always need someone that can disable traps.
Disable traps, pick locks.
Yep. And can sneak around. But yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And getting things ready to go.
I want to see her face when you say that her her dwarven adventurer's kit includes a razor.
No, self-respecting dwarf carries a razor.
So,
touche, my friend.
When I was first teaching my daughter how to role play, and it was probably she was about 8 years old, my wife was very concerned about it because my daughter came home crying, and it was because of the story that I had. Because I can get kind of dark with my stuff, and it's really easy for me to switch over to that. And I scared my daughter at 8 years old. So I'm just happy she's coming back to the flock.
Now you're not going to try and scare her again.
Oh, yeah, I am. Yeah.
Well, that's Daniel. obviously, we don't learn from her mistakes.
No, happens. Not really.
As people, that's what we do.
She enjoys Goosebumps movies now, and last night we sat down together and watched Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. So she said that was an awesome movie, as she put it.
Nice. And she sat through it. She was good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So, Mr. Romo, what about yourself? What have you been up to?
Well, I missed out on a chance to play Letters from Whitechapel last week. So I'm really depressed about that, but I'm going to get another opportunity the following weekend. So hopefully I'll have something to report back to you guys when we record next time. But other than that, it's pretty much my standard fare. I've been in RPG land most of the time. It's just kind of what I do. That's my jam, baby. Been planning the one-shots. I've been putting together a couple of little narrative threads for said one-shots. Each of the different systems. So it's kind of interesting. I'm like transitioning my headspace from fantasy in a narrative sense, like in the dungeon world area, and then off into space, where I'm trying to blend the weirdness of my desires lately. And let me explain that before we get reported. The weirdness of my desires encompasses old 70s sci-fi art that I've been like really getting into lately, and I'm debating on how I want to blend that kind of a feel into the Stars Without Number one shot. So that's been a lot of fun, trying to get my mind into that. So it's been listening to a lot of David Bowie, a lot of Pink Floyd, you know, just trying to like get into that mind space. So a lot of fun there. But yeah, that's kind of been my thing lately.
You've also been cheating on us with another YouTube channel.
How dare you, sir?
Makes me sad.
That's my defensive mechanism. Even if it's true, I'm going to deny it.
I was like, you linked me the evidence.
Oh, that was pretty foolish. Rolled a one on that, didn't I?
So why don't you tell the people where you recently have been seen on the interwebs?
So there's this group called the Invictus Stream, and they are a group of four players. They'll sometimes have a fifth and a sixth player that will kind of interchange with a couple of the other guys. It is an 18-plus show, so I will make sure that you guys know this when you go and you YouTubes them and you take a look at some of the games they play. They're really entertaining. You can definitely tell they've been gaming for years upon years, or at least have been friends for years upon years.
But yeah, they don't hold themselves to the same family-friendly standards that our channel does.
Yes, so be thoroughly warned there. But there's an offshoot that, because the fan base has kind of grown with them, there's an offshoot that they've done called the Invictus Community Stream. And that's where they've brought some of the fan base together. And it's very similar to what I'm doing with the one-shots and what we've been trying to do for a while with our folks. What we did with Victoriana, we brought some of the regulars in for a game. So what I did was I ran what was going to be a one-shot of Dungeon World for them. But once we had sat down for a character creation, we had a really awesome, fun time with Session Zero. And we just ran with it, and the folks at the Harlan Guthrie, the guy who's the head over there at the Invictus Stream, said, you know what, why don't we just make it a five-shot? Let's make it a five-episode story arc. So we turned that into that just because he saw how much fun we were having and the kinds of stories, you know, the backstories and everything that we have that are getting put together. And it's one reason number 47 out of probably 151 reasons why I love Dungeon World as a system. Obviously, it's new to me. I've just kind of gotten into it over the last couple of months. But I gotta say, it's a fantastic gateway into learning how to balance narrative with rules. It's definitely on the rules light side of the spectrum, this game, Dungeon World. Based on the Apocalypse World engine, I think I've mentioned on this show before. But it's a great way to kind of get people started and get their creative juices flowing. And you go from having a GM and players to having a GM and a bunch of sub-GMs around the table with you as you're kind of building this world and building your shared story. So, in any case, we finished recording our first session 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, got put up onto the interwebs last Saturday. I think I linked it in the tavern, so hopefully guys have been enjoying that. It's also kind of a great preview for what we'll be enjoying in July with the Dungeon World one-shot. But I gotta say, the really cool thing about this and what I'm gonna look forward to with our shared game here in the tavern from, you know, recruiting from there is, and fans of the show, is the idea that it's worldwide. It's truly worldwide. I had a gentleman that was in New York, one that was in Singapore, and then one that was in Norway. So it was just all around the world, literally.
Nice.
I love the internet.
That's what I like about virtual tabletops.
That's for sure. That's definitely for sure. Well, you know what? You were talking a little bit earlier about a new one that was in beta, and then you had about 2 minutes to look at it.
Yeah, so I got pinged on Twitter by this company called Skirmish, and they're making a new virtual table called Skirmish VT. And so I went in and got a chance to look at some of the videos and stuff, and because my open beta ended tonight and I didn't have time to play with it at work today. So it's awesome. It's as far as like what I see that it can do right at the moment. It's got support for animated graphics and audio. Like say you have a map with a river, you can literally have that river flowing in animation and a waterfall at the end of it, and you hear sounds from the river going and stuff like that. It looks really pretty, and it's not. Nice. It's a FAT client, which means that it has to install on your computer, and the DM has to run a server. So hopefully I can get into a little bit more. I don't know what all it supports, or if it actually supports its own system or whatnot. So I tweeted to them just a minute ago to ask if I could have a little bit longer on my beta than just tonight.
I've always been fascinated with that stuff just because it does. I mean, we've seen it with the stuff that we use, and even before we started doing that for the YouTube channel, like we've used stuff like Tabletop Simulator and things like that to just try and bring people together, because I mean, all of us here on this podcast, we're all adults, all of us are married, Daniel has kids, so it becomes a challenge to get a bunch of adults who find themselves in that situation to be able to not only take the time to actually play the game, but on top of that, you've got to deal with kid wrangling, with loading up cars, with the actual time to get to where you're going.
Yeah. Like,
that's for sure.
With me, like, before I was married, my gaming, this is how my weekends went, you know, because my wife worked, she waited tables. So Friday night was Dungeons & Dragons, Saturday morning was Warhammer 40K, and then LAN parties on Saturday nights. And so, like, you know, that was just me. The entire weekend for me was gaming. And then I got married. And, and then I'm like, I've got to sell my Warhammer army because I have a lot of lead miniatures. And thanks for that, because I had a baby on the way. And then, as my child was little and she couldn't do a lot, I could tote her around and take her places. But then I'd have to feed her and things like that. So, like, The thing was, though, I was pulling myself away from my gaming to spend time with my family and be with my family. And then, like, when I started to discover these virtual tabletops and these, you know, it kind of connected me back in with people I haven't been able to play with for a while. you know, right. and it kind of plugged me back in because, you know, everybody has to have that period of their week where they recharge. And for me, that was gaming. I know I should have said church, but it...
Daniel,
that's
this
with us all the time.
Daniel, this is a safe place. We can say that both are equal.
No. I'm going to be moving to the left.
I'm gonna get mail on that one. It's all right.
that's where I recharged that was when I got to be with my friends and play games with them and talk to them and just joke around. And then throughout the rest of the week, I'm, you know, talking about the game, emailing them, saying, hey, look, blah, blah. So now I can do that again, and I don't have to leave the house. See, my wife, it's not that I play the games, it's that I spend time away from the family. Right. So, like, and you know, she's actually given me permission to start going to the comic shops, and I know it sounds weird, but, you know, when I'm going to take a four-hour block on Saturdays, every other Saturday, to go play in Pathfinder Society games. I mean, she's given me that permission to do that now. And, like, I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to try this. And you know, but for me to be able to come in, everybody's in bed, and I'm like, I'm going to go play a game. Who wants to play some games? Or some, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, it's just a way for me to recharge throughout the week, you know, spend a little bit of time playing these games and you know, talking to people. And, you know, that's when... The casual conversation for me is when, you know, I can help people and stuff like that. That's, you know, most of the time if I counsel anybody, I bring a game with me. You know, if I'm asked to do anything, I end up making them play games eventually in their life.
And that's it's a transition that I've seen a lot more of in this hobby, in this kind of engagement that we have here with the tavern and with other folks that are in this, like I said, in this hobby. I've seen the transition from like what you were talking about, where I look at my wife and she looks at me and she says, how come you're coming back home around 2 or 3 in the morning? What are you doing? Well, this is flashing back 15 years to like the beginning of our marriage. And I'm thinking, well, I've done this all my life. I stay up late and I play game. At least you know where I am. I'm at a table with the rest of the guys. And she's like, well, you're married now. Why are you doing this? And so, you have to make that transition of recentering your focus, you know, as is intended to the family. You're saying, okay, this is going to be my priority. This is my sacrifice. This is my home base. And then, you know, as you start kind of making sure you're rearranging your priorities, boom, you can start moving into, like you said, reengaging with the hobby, getting back together with old friends. And then the magic of the internet allows you to get rid of that all important problem that can occur, and believe me, it does not replace face-to-face gaming. I love that above all things, but it gets rid of that all-important problem of location, thinking, you know, you can literally do something last minute. You can say, you know, I've got 30 minutes, I can send out the word to the folks and say, hey guys, hey gals, let's get together in about 30 minutes, let's play a game for about an hour and then call it quits. So you don't have to say, okay, I've got to find out who's got their open garage. Who is it? Where is it not 175 degrees in said garage? Where do I go for this? So, yeah, it's a change.
And anymore, you know, it was one thing, like, way back in the day, for those of us who remember when the internet was a new thing. I remember, like, getting on, like, MUDs and stuff back in the day. And just being like, this is neat, but I don't really feel like I'm connecting with these folks. Like, it's text scrolling across my screen. I mean, it's cool still, but whatever. Anymore, like, with things like Tabletop Simulator and Tabletopia and this thing that Daniel just talked about and all these things, as more and more of these are coming out, let alone all the various app versions of board games that are coming out on the regular, it's actually, there's an element that a lot of these are doing, that a lot of these are implementing, that embraces the physicality of it. Like when we played Ashes, when I taught you guys how to play Ashes on Tabletop Simulator, you actually do have to go in and like pick up the tokens and shuffle the deck. And yeah, it is a digital representation, but
Well, that was my simple Simon moment. I was, like, so easily amused by the fact that you can click the dice back and forth and you can touch the cards and stuff. That was awesome.
And I mean, there's something just about that, which it's really interesting, especially now that all the VR headsets, I mean, granted, they're far from perfect right now, and a lot of them are buggy as all get out and require Uber hardware to run.
But, and Dramamine.
Yeah. But with the rise of VR, people are saying that you're going to literally be able to, like, deal yourself into a game. Like, and that's awesome to me. Like, the idea that you're looking around and you're seeing your buddy next to you, I mean, virtually, but still seeing right. them.
And like, they actually look like their character or something crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the possibilities are huge, and it'll be interesting to see as time goes by how that impacts things.
See, I'll finally be able to bring Grub Yub Sloppy Pants, the goblin archer, to life. It's going to be so awesome.
Grub Yub Sloppy Pants.
It's exactly as awesome as it sounds.
I'm sure it is. And
so then we'll have like two shows you can film. You can have the film inside VR, and then you can have the show, the film of people acting crazy outside of VR as you're filming them with the goggles on.
I'm convinced that 2/3 of the advertisement for how awesome VR is watching people do stupid things.
Oh yeah. I'm going to get it just to watch my kids do stuff. But, yeah. But then I'm going to randomly put stuff in the floor.
Oh, that's just wrong. You see, and you wonder know why there's so much time between the space where they play games with you.
Yeah.
All right, but there, you know, it's funny that you talk about, you know, as we talk about the virtual stuff, I'm always brought back to the aspect of being at the table, because I'll tell you what, man, the experiences that I've had. Now, granted, one of them could easily have been done virtually. I got to play it's a new game for me. The game itself has been around for a while, but somebody donated a copy of Boss Monster to the En-ROADS library, and I had my buddy over. And
somebody press pause right now on your audio and go and Google the cover of Boss Monster, because as I said before, it's exactly as awesome as it sounds.
Oh, I absolutely love the entirety of it. It basically looks like if Mega Man was if you took Mega Man and Final Fantasy and made it the same game. You're looking at the artwork for this. It's so good, but it's actually a really simple light game, which I like because it's light enough that it took me like half a second to figure out how to play it. But there is enough strategy. Like I always, you know, I already ragged on Munchkin once, but I say, you know, I rag on it, but now I'm going to actually say why. Like I don't. After a while, I got tired of just flip a card. I can either do something or I can't. Like, that's the extent of the mechanics of that game. And people love it. And again, I'm not going to bash it, but it does nothing for me. It's literally like an hour and a half of flip a card, yay, or flip a card, boo. And so that's what doesn't do anything for me. Boss Monster, you are basically lining up a series of rooms that adventurers are going to have to go through. You can set up to 5 rooms in your dungeon that is basically like a gauntlet that these guys have to go through. And your goal is to kill them before they get to your boss. Now, you'll have, like, the rooms themselves will have different things. So there's rooms that, like, build on each other, rooms that buff other rooms, rooms that have something awesome happen if the guy dies in that room. There's lots of cool stuff that happens there. You also have spell cards, which can do all sorts of crazy things. But here's also what happens. The other people playing can mess with your dungeon. I think the worst one, the worst one that somebody had happen to me was they had this huge crazy guy who just went hog wild through my dungeon, just stomped on everything, got to my guy, wounded me. It was terrible. And then he flipped his card and said, oh, by the way, that guy is now brought back to the beginning of your dungeon and he runs through again. And I'm like, oh, just make it stop.
It hurts my heart.
Like,
I've been wanting to try that game, by the way.
It is a simple game. I will not, you know, bloat it. It is it is very much, you know, I don't want to call it beer and pretzels game, because there is a little bit more to it. There is a little bit more about strategy and timing and when to do what, and figure out, you know, how to get new cards when you don't have any. And there is stuff going on. So it's more thinky than your standard beer and pretzels. But it's a real light game, and I love it. So that one could go virtual. In fact, I'm pretty confident that if I were to fire up Tabletop Simulator right now, I could find Boss Monster on it. However, there were two things that I did that technically you could do virtually, but there's something about being there. If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you saw that I had a gentleman who's been on the podcast before a long time ago, by the name of Brett Anderson. He straight up said, look, I don't have any money, my time is limited, but I'm really good at painting miniatures. I want to support Inroads, give me one of your games, I'll paint it up and make it look awesome. And I said, okay, here's Blood Rage, because Blood Rage has epic minis, and I can't wait to see them painted. And holy cow, these things. Maybe I might post, I definitely have them in, like, various places on Facebook, but I might post them either freshly in the tavern or on this post when I put the podcast up. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, but you got to do that, because it's been like piecemeal. Like, we get a shot here, a shot there.
Well, man,
let's get the whole crew together.
We need a macro lens. We need the white backdrop and the correct
lighting. He made them look amazing. And I got to sit down and play a game. Now, granted, it was only a two-player game, so it wasn't as epic as it could have been. But when you first get the game out of box, like, the normal guys are like this tan plastic, just no color, just straight-up tan plastic. The monsters, blue plastic. And they're fine. The miniatures are still good. They're still really, really detailed and really, really solid. But there was something about having these things painted and seeing these things move across the board. And it was amazing. Like, he had such great detail. And like things like one of the clans, I think it's the Serpent Clan, their guys actually have, like, the severed heads of their victims, like, tied to a belt. And he actually went in and did little details on all of that. I'm like, this, I didn't even notice that before. Like, you don't take the time to sit down and see those things when they're not painted. You kind of glaze over it and go, yeah, those are really cool minis. But now that he's painted them and he took the time to notice all these tiny little details and paint them so that they stand out more, man, like, these clans now have distinct identities just looking at them on my table, which it was hard to do that before they were painted. It's kind of the thing that it reminded me of is that if you've ever played Warhammer 40K, orc technology works on the idea that you paint things red because red makes them go faster. Yes. And that
works.
That's not just a concept. That's actually something in the game, because if you paint an orc miniature red, it actually is allowed to move farther on the table.
The Greek, I play 40K. The mythos behind the orcs and their technology is that they just put it together, and it doesn't even have to have an engine. It works.
It just works.
Yeah, it just works, and it's just something about their psychic power that has to deal with the orcs.
Yep, and so I'm buying that now. I'm fully bought in on the orc mentality, because as much as I loved Blood Rage before, after painting those minis, it's even cooler.
Nice.
The other moment, which there's just something about it happening at the table, because I could see all the little nuances in the players as they did this. I was playing in my Numenera game, and I had a ton of fun setting this up. I was creating all sorts of little things, because these guys were going to be breaking into a citadel of this organization in the ninth world called the Convergence. These guys are bad news, and my players were breaking into one of their three strongholds. So I said, look, this is not going to be a fight your way room to room, because if you do that, they will kill you. There are too many of them, and their technology is too advanced. However, you can, you know, occasionally fight and work your way through. Well, these guys did a couple little battles. They were getting scared. They were getting weak. They didn't know they were going to make it. And at the top of this tower, there were three what they call magisters. Like, big... I mean, to use a general gaming term, these are bosses. Now, technically, they only had to fight one, but they didn't know which one. And I was like, this is going to be great. They're hurt, they're tired, and they're going to have to deal with this nonsense. It's going to be awesome.
Wait. You said this is great, as in you were about to kill your players?
I wasn't going to kill them.
I was just going to hurt them a little.
They might have died, but I wasn't going to kill them. There's an important distinction there. But
it is Numenera. I mean, it's Thundar the Barbarian on steroids. I mean, it's right. Amazing. Maybe on acid, I guess.
I wanted them to... Because I've been playing easy with them up till this point. Like, they never had to worry. They never had to rest. They were confident all the time. And I go, no, they've settled in now. It's time to shake things up.
So now they have to pay attention to resources. They got to pay attention to environment.
Paying attention to resources is exactly what I'm going to talk to you about today.
Yeah.
In Numenera, you get these things called ciphers. They're very powerful, one-shot and done items. Because they're fairly prevalent, so the likelihood that you're going to find a new one is pretty high. So the game itself encourages you to spend these and get new ones and play these and get new ones. So throughout the course of the adventure, they got a bunch of them, but there were two that are of particular importance for this event. And I'm just dealing these out randomly. Like, I didn't, like, set them up for this. They cobbled this together MacGyver style.
Nice.
One of the things they picked up was a pocket automaton. He basically was this... It was this little device that fits in your pocket. Once you activate it, it like kind of morphs and changes into this 2 foot tall little mechanical servant. And the idea was that the mechanical servant didn't have an intellect, but it would follow orders. So anything you told it to do, it would do. The other item they got was referred to as a rage gas bomb. And the idea of the rage gas bomb is that anybody that's within the gas will, and I think they rolled the level, it was like a level 4 rage gas bomb. So they, depending on the level of the bomb, anybody that's caught in the gas hits the closest thing to it up to that many times. So they'd be hitting each other 4 times. So as these guys were sitting there planning on what they were going to do, they're sitting in this kind of central room that the three magisters' offices were off of. And one of them just kind of starts giggling. One of my players just starts giggling, and he goes, "I've got an idea." And he goes, "We just picked up the rage bomb, and we have the little automaton guy who can use ciphers." And he got really excited. He pointed at me. He goes, "Mike said he can use ciphers." I go, "I did. I told you he could do that." And they go, "What we're gonna do is, we tell him to stand in the middle of the room, and when all three of these magisters are within eyesight, then he blows the rage bomb."
See, this is what happens, kids, when you listen to your GM. Listen to those hints.
And every one of my players, and again, this is the part that goes beyond the virtual, because I'm just watching as all the eyes at once just go wide. And they're like, This is going to happen. This is a thing we're doing. And I think the best comment, and I actually ended up putting it in the tavern because it was such a great quote. It's from Alyssa, who is also featured on our Victoriana game. She's actually close to me, so I have her play locally with me. And Alyssa just goes, "Are we about to play Ding Dong Ditch and kill a murder cult?" And And the short version is that yes, literally, they set up the automaton who they called Archimedes. They set up Archimedes in the middle of the room, told him his job, and then all three of them stood by the doors of the Magisters, and on three, they all knocked and ran. I made them roll a check to see if they could get out. My brother ended up tripping, but some quick thinking, and this was great, because Alyssa basically has these, like, mental, like, onslaughts, and she goes, I'm going to physically, like, onslaught the crap out of him and push him down the stairs. I'm like, brilliant, I love it. And technically, all three of those guys could have survived that. They were.
But you can't.
Every
you
one can't of them. As a GM. Every one of them was a boss. They easily could have survived. At least the one guy who was like this major soldier could have easily survived. But I said, no. I said, I'm giving them this. I said, they worked too hard and did too much awesome for me not to just straight up give this to them.
They handed you a fresh Death Star trench run. And you have to give it to him.
It was so amazing. So I straight up gave it to him. There was this tense moment as they all kind of leaned forward in their chairs and went, did Archimedes make it? And I'm like, look, I could give you this awesomeness, but that having the robot live would be a little too much for me. I said,
I have to take something from you because you took something from me.
But literally, like, they took this epic series of fights that could have potentially ended them, and in one fell swoop just said, no, we're going to do something awesome instead.
That's the amazing thing about these games is the creativity that goes into it. And to your point, Mike, the fun about being at the table and feeling that collective intake of breath as an idea sets into the middle of the table and is just like, we got it. I know exactly what we're going to do. That's an amazing feeling.
No, it's literally how that broke down because of the fact that I could actually watch as the guy's suggestion before he even finished it. He goes, we have a robot. And then one set of eyes started opening wide and he says, and we have a bomb. And at that point, even I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is about to happen. and all of us are just like, I think Alyssa was physically like bouncing in her chair. She was so excited about this plan. And there's just like, yeah, technically, I mean, we do it on Roll20. You can technically see each other on camera, but there's something about just that presence that it completely just makes it fantastic to me. And I'm such a huge fan of that. And I love it because, and you talked about Dungeon World. Dungeon World does this too. Numenera basically says, like, there's only three stats in the game. And basically people can come up with whatever the heck they want. And then it's my job to say, all right, that's your target number's 15. You can roll. Like, I mean, there is, you can do literally anything, which is how we ended up with Ding Dong Ditch Murder without fail. Like, that was one of the coolest moments I've had. And here's the other thing about it too. And I think you'd probably appreciate this too, Jeff, because of the running the Dungeon World that you've been doing lately. I've GM'd a lot. I've run games for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really spectacular. Like, when you come up with something good, it's nice. It's awesome. It's a good feeling. When you step away from writing some notes, or when you see something unfolding, or you've laid the building blocks and your players have really picked something up and are running with it, there is something fun about that. But when you get the response, when you see that in your players, that they are really getting it. And I'll tell you the exact moment that really kicked this up for me in this game, without going too much more into gaming story. There was something that Alyssa put in her character's backstory long before we even started playing this game. That she is from a family of healers and scientists, and their big thing was that their family became famous because there was this plague that went all through the Steadfast. and her family cured it, basically. And so I actually had her find this journal in one of the Magister's labs that basically found articles about that plague, had her mother's name circled in the articles, like, and all of a sudden she's like, wait a minute, does this mean? I go, it means what you think it means. And she went nuts, and she even commented to me afterwards, just like, this was awesome. And there's something about having that moment and bringing that moment out in somebody. Because, like, I randomly selected the Mechanical Servant and the Rage Bomb. That was not something that I planned to use. I used one of the tools, which is basically a deck of cards that says, all right, whenever you need to get a new cipher, deal out some cards and pick one for what you're going to give them. That's literally how I gave them those things, and they cobbled together this piece of brilliance. And then to have that escalate into that moment of that revelatory moment, and just after we were done, after we wrapped that up, like, everyone just kind of sat at the table, huge smiles on their faces, going, "I can't believe we just did that." I just love that. I love being able to bring that out in people. I didn't make that. They made it. But what I can say is that I was able to bring that out and create the framework for that to happen.
We can kind of get close towards making the turn, but I'll build us up towards it.
Oh, we're making it. We're turning
it. We've talked about how, you know, I think, Daniel, you made a really great point about how that kind of transition our lives with responsibilities in the world around us and with family and with kids and all the things that go along with that. And then reestablishing almost that importance of gaming in our lives and what it does for us. You know, along the way, we have to kind of be willing, and I've heard this phrase tossed around before, we have to be willing to crush our darlings when it comes to being able to allow for the fun of others and allow for the responsibilities in life to kind of be a part of us. Any game master worth their salt is going to have certain plans for a gaming table. You know, they're going to say, okay, here's my thread, here's what I want to have happen. But at the same time, the cool monster that you created or these magisters that you had set up in this area, you had to be willing to let them die for the purpose of bringing enjoyment to the table and fulfilling that uplifting moment that your team had. I mean, it's a thing that is a difficult lesson. I had a conversation earlier this week about, you know, being able to kind of willingly give up your time, willingly give up your stake in the game. To be able to allow other people to have that chance at fun. And it sounds so simple, right? You know, it sounds like a simple concept, but it can be really difficult for some, you know, players, and especially for some game masters, to be able to allow that to happen. And that definitely drifts into our worldview and how we see things around us.
Well, I had somebody ask me about whether I preferred game mastering or playing. And I've been doing both for a long time, and basically the only thing I could say in response to that was they are completely different experiences. I can't say that I like either better, but it's a completely different thing. When I'm playing as a character, and Jeff, you've literally had the option to have me as a player. When I'm a player, I'm all about seeing how my guy fits into the world. I'm trying to figure out what my guy wants, how he got to where he is, and how he plans to get to where he wants to be. I love seeing the ripples that he makes in the world. But when I'm the game master, I'm not looking to make those moments. I'm looking to help other people create those moments.
You gotta have that servant's heart as a game master.
Yeah.
It really boils down for me, like, with that is that, you know, the experiences that we get to feel and introduce new people to the games as well, we've got to bring that forward you have to have a passion for it, and you have to want to show them you know, how awesome this game can be and give them the best experience. And you can't do that. Well, I'm going to kill everybody in the team, you know.
Well, you can't even do that if you're so tied to your story and your notes that you don't let the players do what they want to do. If you are so hard up that what you wanted to see happen must happen, they're not going to care. And in fact, every bad gaming story I've ever heard of, probably two out of every three of them are the GM basically, I wanted to do this, and the GM basically told me I couldn't.
And you know what? I mean, there's a place for rules. There's a place for saying, oh, you know, you're only 3 feet tall. You're a halfling. Unfortunately, you can't reach that 12-foot ledge. But then if you come up with something awesome that helps you get there, I'm going to roll with it. We're going to make it happen. But it's opening up it's lifting the brakes off of creativity. It's saying that I value you as a player. I value you as a game master, that I want to see where you go with your imagination. And I think I've seen more fun at a table when that happens. And I've seen people who are quiet come out of their shell and say, oh, I can totally be a part of this. I have a bond with this other person, and I'm going to share that at the table. It opens doors to hearts. And especially when you approach game mastering, as you said, Daniel, with a servant's heart.
I'll kind of tie it into this thing, like in the greater context, like, we all at some point or another have led ministries or been pastors. And when I was trying to figure out, because in seminary, they make you kind of nail down, like, what is your leadership style? And the best illustration I ever had was not in a classroom. It was actually when I used to go swing dancing. Because when we go swing dancing, the people who would teach the class, they'd be like, all right, leads, this is your job. Your job is to make your follows look good. A great lead will disappear. A great lead will basically do nothing but showcase the other person. And I'm listening to this guy tell me how to dance, and I'm like, this is the perfect understanding of what leadership is. When you're doing it right, you disappear, and the people you are leading get all the attention. That is so much about GMing, is literally getting your butt off the stage. You're getting you out of the spotlight and putting the other people there, giving them the opportunity to make the great decisions, giving them the opportunity to come up with the great answer, and letting them figure out how they're going to make the next move. Because your job as the GM is not to tell the story. You know, a lot of people will say it is, and it's not. Your job is to provide the pieces of the narrative. It's the players that make the story with your pieces.
My last session, they looked at me when I kept telling them they're the ones who are rolling the dice. They're the ones who are helping me tell this story. And they, at the end of the game, they looked at me and said, I don't think you rolled a single die during the game. I was like, that's not my job.
Numenera, the DM, literally is never rolling a die. The DM never touches a die in Numenera. Because it's not, like you said, it's not his job. That I think that's why it's quickly becoming my favorite system, because it is so player-driven. Now, granted, it gives the GM a lot of agency with the intrusions, but as in spite of the fact that it gives the GM agency, it still puts the vast majority of responsibility for what's happening next in the hands of the player. And it lets them play. And so, yeah, it's fun. We're going to be repeating that. I'm pretty confident I'm going to be using that for the title of this episode, because Daniel nailed it, is that that's the understanding of how servanthood appears as a GM. It's why I tell every role player who says they want to get better at role playing that they need to spend some time behind the screen, because just like any great leader needs to learn how to follow before they can lead, a great player knows what the GM needs to do what they do. A great player has been on the other side of that screen and goes, if I give him this, if I let him play with this NPC in my background, if I tell him my person is scared of this, forget mechanics, forget anything else. If I give them that, then they can do something awesome with it. And then the GM goes, I have been given a gift with this knowledge, and I am going to make sure that this is awesome for them.
And that's, and you're saying the, or you're not saying the thing that's going on here is that there's kind of a contract between the game master and the players, an unwritten one, that you give and you take and you give and receive, whatever. The idea that, yeah, there's going to be things put out on the table. How do the players respond? How does the game master respond? And like you said, if I give them this history, like, I'm definitely afraid of spiders. How is he going to respond with that? How's the game master going to use that? How's the other players going to use that? I almost feel like sometimes I almost drift into a psychiatrist tone. Like when a player asks me a question, I ask them the question right back. Mm-hmm. Did I get hurt with this? And I'll say, well, how did you get hurt with this?
It does kind of have like one-to-one things sometimes. Like a lot of times when we think about service, sometimes that brings up feelings of well, crap. We don't want to serve. As much as I'd love to say that I'm, you know, 100% into service and use that great, you know, dancing leader, you know, illustration. Yeah, there are times when it really sucks when serving other people is difficult and annoying, especially when I want to do something that they don't.
That's on our other episode of Shouty, Shouty, Angry Voice.
But as much as it can suck and as much as I don't like it, it really is about putting it in their hands and seeing what they can do with it and seeing what they'll make of it, what they're going to come up with, because not a one of us does this perfect all the time. We can come up with the greatest story ever. In fact, this group that I'm playing with now is infamous because I started off doing a module for Numenera. It's long since left that module. And it's partly because of, you know, I work hard at crafting it, but it's also partly because these guys have made decisions that are way off book. And so I had to come up with stuff on the fly. And it's been really interesting just to watch this and to ride with this and to give them their moment to realize that when I'm doing this right, I am literally getting out of the way and letting them do this. And so in the game that we just did, I had created these characters called the Dogs. Because one of the things they discovered was that these people were basically doing biomechanical engineering to try and breed super soldiers. And I told them, I said, you had read notes in the record hall that they had just come out of. You had read notes about these things. These are the Dogs. I go, tell me what the Dogs look like. I literally did not write one thing in my notes about what the Dogs looked like. I let them tell me what the Dogs looked like. And I promise you that what they came up with was way nastier than what I was thinking.
Nothing can top the horror of your own players' minds.
And I think, you know, to kind of leave the gaming context, I think that's something that a lot of people in leadership need to really grasp, is this idea that, you know, so much of how we do leadership now, especially in churches, but in business as well, and everything, we think that the leader has to be the one putting out the big idea. You know, to use the churchy catchphrase, it's casting vision. You need to be the guy who is casting vision. And, you know, speaking as the president of InRoads Ministries, I try to do that.
Vision's one thing, but I would think that job one in a leader is that they listen.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's that you nailed it right there, is that I think that, you know, rather than having to be the guy or be the woman in charge, a lot of times the best way to be that leader is to step back and let your people be awesome and provide them the opportunity to be awesome. And heck, man, God does that to us all the time.
He puts us in that place.
I've always said that God does not need us to do anything. God does not need us to have his will happen. He's God. He lets us be a part of it. He encourages us to be a part of what he's doing. Downright pushes us to do what he wants us to do.
You know, and that's the part where I don't like. That's the part I don't like at all.
But in the end, it's even though he doesn't need us, he makes us available to the option of being there and being a part of it. And I love that. I think that's so much of life and leadership just there. That servant heart that says, I'm here to make you look awesome.
Can't argue with that, my friend.
All right. Well, it's looking like we're about ready to wrap up. Daniel, I know you can't look into the future and, you know, proclaim how awesome your one shot was, because by the time this goes live, it will have already happened.
You know, we could always contact future Daniel.
Are we able to contact future Daniel? Yes. I would love to contact future Daniel.
Okay.
Quite possible.
Well, let me get him on the phone. Future Daniel speaking. How can I help you?
Oh, that's good stuff. That is good stuff.
Man, I love that, I like future that. Daniel.
He's a really calm and chipper guy.
And I got to say, he's a lot less messy than future Mike.
Hey. Listen, future Mike does good work. I'm just saying, you gotta ease off on that guy.
He does fantastic work.
You're dang right. Future Mike does fantastic work. Hello, friends. Future Mike here because future Daniel doesn't work here. At least not yet. The short version of the after action report following Daniel's excursion into Savage Worlds is that only one person was able to come out and play, but a fun time was still had by all, according to reports. You can find their discussion about playing through a little bit of Lone Wolf Savage Worlds action in the tavern. You can also find Jeff's schedule for the rest of the summer of one-shots there, and you need to make sure that you get on there and sign up and mark your calendars, because there is a whole lot of awesome happening there. Anyway, now that I've proven that there's only room for one time-traveling future host on this podcast, I'll let you get back to the episode. Future Mike out. This is the point where I'll let you guys know that TavernCon is getting ever closer.
Woohoo!
If you are going to be in the New Jersey area on June 18th, we are going to be available for 10 hours of open gaming. I am super excited because this year the stuff we're going to be raffling off is bigger and better. We've had people donate some truly amazing things. The Pretense Meta Tournament, the prize was, last year it was like one game of Jason's that I picked up, you know, on like at like Barnes & Noble. This year he has given us an entire like prize pack of his games, including a pre-release copy of the newest game that they have, the Superplex, the Pocket League Extreme Wrestling game. That it's a pre-release copy of that he's given us to give to somebody who wins that tournament. I'm super excited about that. The Bodana group is coming. Not only are they awesome, not only are they a fantastic group, they're bringing a bunch of stuff that is targeted towards, you know, child development. And one thing I'm super excited about is they are going to be bringing and running games of No Thank You Evil, which is an RPG that is specifically designed to be played and run by kids. So,
I'm so looking forward to a report on that.
I want to buy that so bad.
Everybody I know who has kids, I've been like recruiting them. I go, please, I need to see how this plays with small children. Bring your children to TavernCon. But no, it's going to be just an amazing time. I'm thinking that this might be the biggest event we've ever run. Ultimately, I have no.
I'm going to say it. It is going to be the biggest event we've ever run.
Ultimately, but. I have no idea because, as I've mentioned a couple times, there have been times where I've expected 10 people and 30 people have shown up. There have been a time when I've expected 100 people and 20 have shown up. So I've just come to, you know, plan ahead but not care about numbers. I've kind of just thrown in the, you know, God's going to bring who God's going to bring. But I am. It's going to be a really good time this year, and I'm super looking forward to it. Hopefully, that you can find on our website all of the different information about that if you're in the area. We would absolutely love to see you come out and play with us.
And the cool thing is, when he says the word in or the phrase in the area, that includes people who are upwards of 4 or 5 hours away.
We have several people who will be traveling multiple hours to get there. This actually includes our new volunteer, Sean Brooks, who...
Yay, Sean!
Yay, Sean!
I will give a shout out to Sean because this is, you know, it was only recently that he was officially named a volunteer. It's really funny because he might as well have been a volunteer for a long time now. He has literally, like, he's literally worn the En-ROADS colors, like, in other countries doing mission work. He and his family have done a lot for En-ROADS and for the ministry, even before we named him an official volunteer. So, basically, like, when Daniel came on, I'm like, all right, Daniel, this is what we need you to do. We need to do this and this and this and this. With Sean, I literally sat him down. I go, just keep doing what you're already doing.
Thanks for showing me up, Sean.
Nice work, Sean.
So, whatever. Super happy that he's on the team, especially not only because it's great, not only because he's local here in New Jersey, but he also helped me get halfway to one of my New Year's resolutions, which I didn't know if I was going to actually do. So the fact that I'm halfway, I've got one recruit, I just need one more. But
everybody, say it with me:
one of us.
But. That being said, guys, as always, inroadsministries.com, that's two N's. You can find all of our stuff there. You can find links to our YouTube channel. You can find links to Twitter and Instagram. You can find links to our Board Game Geek Guild, which is fast approaching 40 members, which I'm a big fan of. You can find us all over the net there. You can find Jeff on the Invictus stream coming up. You can find... I was on the arcade. I've got another podcast that I'm guesting in, but that's not till August, so I'm going to tell you about that, you know, when we actually get closer to it. We have the Summer of One-Shots that is just about ready to get launched with, as we mentioned with Daniel, this upcoming Friday from when we're recording, last Friday from when this goes live. And that will be the first of many. So if you want details on that, it's both on our website as well as in the tavern. Sign up. I know Mr. Romo is excited about his one shots.
Just a little bit.
So definitely be looking into that. And Jeff, I started. How about you bring us home?
I don't know if I can, man.
You got this.
I'm a little choked up.
You got this.
These guys are awesome. I love this job. I really do. But it always brings me back to this. Like, no matter who the heck you think you are, God is the game master. And no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.